Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
Well, you normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Hello and welcome back to another episode brought to you by sportshoes.com. As always, apologies. We are a little late on this Sunday release and I've both been in and out of airports today. Matt's been working over in Copenhagen and I've been on a little holiday as well. So we got back though. We've watched our athletics over the weekend and we are ready to get our teeth stuck into Mr. Jimmy Gressier, world 10,000 meter champion. We did not predict that, did we, mate?
No, who did though? I don't think anyone did. I want to say the odds, I was pretty confident the odds were like outside. I think they were like 60-1 or something, but maybe I'm guessing that. Maybe that was someone else I saw like pre the race. But fascinating race. Fascinating race. So much to talk about within that men's 10K. I mean, firstly, I just think there were a lot of guys in that race who were racing to win.
And which I liked, which was really good.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, we see your Grant Fishers normally are racing for bronze. And that's why they're picking up pieces. And actually, yeah, I think, I'm sorry to cut across you, maybe we were obviously just saying before we start recording that Jimmy's the one today that was racing for picking up bits and pieces, I think, and he's ended up getting the gold somehow. That might totally be unfair, but
I think look, you know, in a few interviews and stuff, what I've picked up, and obviously what we saw, you know, I think whenever you win a Diamond League, you've got huge confidence, and for the people who came away from that Diamond League final and won, like Gressier, surprise winner, gets it done. I think you've got so much confidence going into championships, and it was only 2 weeks. What was it? 2 weeks prior to the championships. It's not even like sometimes it's harder when you do something like that, and then you've got 5 weeks to kill. It's like, Christ, how do I go away and train? How do I manage this now into the championships? But 2 weeks, he just needed to maintain and he just needed to sort of stay healthy, basically. And he was going to be in fantastic shape. And that kick and that close and beating Fisher, who I thought Fisher was going to be a threat for that gold medal, and I thought he was going to be the one to beat, really, going into that race, just because I think he's just a little savvier, a little cuter when it comes to racing than, say, the Ethiopians, and I thought that was going to be his toughest opponent. And, you know, at the end of the day, it was Kijelcha who was the toughest opponent, and pretty much had it won if it wasn't for the last 10 meters where Gressier just manages to edge by him. But I think the only man who, it's interesting, look, Almgren went from relatively, you know, far out. He didn't press that much, but he pushed it and he wound it up and he put himself at the front of the race and it paid off. And Kijelcha was the one who came round Almgren and started to attack, you know, on the back straight, bigger first in the lead. And then Kijelcha on his shoulder attacks, gets on the inside line with 200 to go. And these guys made bold moves. And yes, they didn't get the gold, but they got a medal out of it. And I think Grant Fisher, for me, Nico Young, too hesitant. Grant Fisher, I would have loved this is a guy who I want to see, you know, he's at his best when he's squeezing. And, you know, I think the pack was massive. And yes, it's hot, but surely they can run quicker than sort of 28. They can run quicker than 15 minutes for that first half in the heat and still be okay. And, all you needed to have done is probably run like a 14 minutes. And I think you would have tested a lot of men. Even if it was a 28 flat race or a 27.50 race, you would have tested, you know, a minute slower than what these guys can do. You would have asked the questions of people a little bit more than what happened. And I think because Fisher really wanted the gold, I think Nico Young really wanted the gold. I think all the other Ethiopians wanted the gold. The Kenyans are just, they're just struggling full stop. And so because of that, I think they just didn't quite have the nerve to sort of play to their strengths and execute the race like they have been because they're worried about losing.
I think that's it, mate. And if you make a move like Kujawcza did, which was a great move, in a race that is 60 seconds quicker, no one's coming past you. And he probably can make exactly the same move in a race that's a minute quicker. Do you know what I mean? Like Kujawcza can still run that last lap exactly the same in a race that's 60 seconds quicker. It's bizarre, isn't it? Mate, I thought Fisher just did too much, but not enough the whole race. He's always the front, always like really switched on and like covering moves and all sorts. You just don't need to. Like you really don't need to when you're going that slow and when the race is so long. And look, Jimmy Gresse has always been a big fan of Farah. And to be fair to him, he spent the whole race not worrying about any moves, just like Farah used to do. And just running around. Look, he then didn't go and hit the front like Farah, but he made sure he was there or thereabouts. But for the whole race, he was never anywhere near the front, and he just made sure that he had a smooth run. Fish, that's why he had the energy at the end.
The Fisher's tactics, the right thing to do when...
In a 5K.
You know, in a 5K, but also last year it was sub 27 minutes, and you know it was a 26:40 something or 26:50 something last year, I think. When it's a fast race, it is the right thing to do. Like you want to be even, you want to be smooth, and you probably want to be up front out of trouble and sort of just in contention. But yeah, today was so slow and no one had any intention of getting things moving until extremely late on. And you're right, you know, these guys can kick, and it's always been the way, and Farah was a master of this. You know, he identified this. He goes, really, you know, all you need to be able to do is kick 52-53 last lap. And if it's a 29 minute race, no one tends to go any quicker than that because these guys have limits. You know, they're not 1500 runners. They're certainly not sort of coming from an 800 background. They can't run quicker than a 52 last lap. Yeah. Well, whatever the pace of the race. But one thing they're able to do is run a 52 last lap in a 27 minute race. That's what the best can do, or, you know, a 53, 54. And that was what Farah was so good at. But Farah, you know, you remember with him running that 50 point in that European team jams. He was probably the one guy who could actually go and run a 51-50 if he had to, really off of an extremely slow pace. And I think Gressier's nailed that today, and hats off to him because that's huge. Two Europeans on the podium, first and bronze. I think that's huge. I don't know when the last time that happened in the 10,000. That, I think you're going back to the 50s and 60s, mate, since the last time that happened. I just think that's just great for
the European athletics, mate.
Great for European athletes, because I think it's been a long time coming. You know, we saw it in the 1500, and then we saw, you know, the 5K, someone like Jakob, and now you've got, you know, even in the 10K, that they're competing at a world level, getting on the podium. There's a real changing of the guard for me.
Yeah, it's unheard of, isn't it? And I think it's still a surprise. I'm looking through this results list now, it's in front of me, and I'm like, did that really happen? Like, yeah. French athlete and a Swedish athlete on the podium. Almgren as well. Yeah, I think you bang on, mate. He like ran the exact race he wanted to, and it paid off for him. And I don't think he would have gone into that with, like, I think if you'd given him the bronze before, he'd have like snapped your hand off. So
yeah, and, you know, what is he like? A extremely smart mathematician, right? And, you know, I was reading a few things on him sort of pre-race and then especially post-race, you know, and all the press conferences and stuff that have now come out. You know, he was preparing for this.
He's been on the pod. All that's based off the pod.
And and obviously, yeah, we spoke to him, and like, he's been preparing for this for a long, long time now. And I think the heat as well, I've been surprised how, you know, yes, people are taking, they're using saunas and they're fucking putting those stupid suits on. I've been surprised how few people are actually taking the heat seriously. I think when you've got a 29-minute race, 15:16 at 5K, like, I would have thought more people would be getting to these really hot climates and through the winter, actually maybe going to these hot sticky climates, you know, instead of just like a week or two prior, just to sort of acclimatize. So, and I think Almgren obviously nailed it. It's easy for us to say, like, he was obviously the most acclimatized to the heat when he comes away with a bronze and beats people like Fisher and Nico. Problem is with Fisher and Nico, Americans full stop. You know, that old American trials is so tough. You know, they have to go do a 5K, 10K double at American trials, and they have to race each other, and they have to beat someone like Grant Blanks. They have to hold off Drew Hunter. You know, they have all these guys, Woody Kincaid, stacking up behind them. And it's like, you know, I do feel that's where the Europeans, they will always have an advantage because they never have to contest a fierce 10K race like that. And the same with the Africans. They have to go do a, you know, they have to go do that pre-classic and run their 26.
Yeah, and the travel obviously for that, for some of them, is just ridiculous as well. And
saying that,
you don't have to double though, mate. they don't have to double.
Why wouldn't
you? I know obviously you're giving yourself an extra chance, right? But if the trials is so grueling and
just on the heat training, by the way, mate, Lorna Kiplagat, met her in Kenya before the Mombasa World Cross Country Championships, which she won. She would cycle in the sauna. She was
in like pre-race or
no. This was just like in her build-up, in her training block. Yeah, she would put a spin bike in a sauna and cycle 40 minutes extreme heat. Yeah.
Well,
that is unorthodox heat training.
When we filmed that workout of Yi,
he was doing some sort of heat
training. Years ago now, like pre the Olympics, he started telling us about this.
Yeah. I'm sure these guys, you know, these guys were preparing for the heat, I'm sure. But another point, you know, we're talking about, I guess, it being a disadvantage that Fisher and Nico and stuff like that have a fierce 10K trial and it's quite a long way out. Like they do have to be in pretty good shape at the end of July, the US champs. And so it's 6 weeks out. It's difficult. 6 weeks. If it was 12 weeks or 8 weeks, 10 weeks, a little bit easier, but 6 weeks is a difficult time period. Mm-hmm. But you know, back in the day, there'd be loads of 10,000 meter races. And there's not many. And I think there's a lot of people who get in these 10,000s and they don't really know what to do and how to run them.
And how to play to their strengths. Much indoors or whatever, as they did. Grant Fisher didn't have to go and do that. That was his choice. Like, I think it's easy to make excuses for them but at the same time, they know exactly what the season's going to look like. Grant Fisher's known what this season's going to look like for the past 4 years. So he clearly thought that was the right way to go about it, was to run fast indoors, was to have a hard US champs and do this and do Grand Slam.
Yeah, he's done too much, hasn't he? It's a shame. Had him to win the five, but hey. that last 100 didn't impress me today. Like you can't be coming eighth against those guys. No, the 5K, you're up against even more kickers. You know, you're up against some filthy kickers in the five. And you're up against some of the same guys, full stop. You know, you're up against Gressy, you're up against Almgren, Nico Young, possibly Kjeldtjer. He might even step in now. And yeah, but it was a great race. Great to see Gressy on the podium. I think it's been fun following his career, coming from cross-country background and, you know, just sort of stepping up. Last year was a massive year for him as well. And I think some people are being a bit harsh. They were like, oh, you know, this guy was X place in the Olympics. But I'm like, isn't that the story of everyone? Like, Whiteman was ninth in Tokyo and then won the 2022 World Champs. Like, I know he picked up a few Diamond Leagues and stuff in that, like, maybe around that time. But, you know, Farah didn't even make it out of the heats in the Beijing Olympics, you know, and then a couple of years later wins gold. And, you know, 2009 was like seventh or eighth in the final. And then 2011, the next time it's a World Champs goes and, yeah, I guess silver he won gold, second, right? But yeah, silver and gold. I think it's just, you know, and what this could do for Gressier's career is huge. And Kiprun taking a huge chance on it. Well, not a huge chance on him, Jesus. I mean, they signed him and they let him run in Adidas spikes. He's binned off the Dragonflies. He was in Addies, mate. He was in Adidas spikes. We'll call him an Adidas athlete.
Nah, he's very much a Kiprun athlete, obviously.
Yeah. That is peak, though. They've tried to, like, white out the spikes, but they are clearly Adidas spikes, and Kiprun are paying him. I've heard so many rumours about Gressier's contract, but I think over multiple years, it's not far off of a million.
Yeah, it makes sense, though, for a company like that, obviously.
Yeah, that's what I heard, you know, and it would make sense. You know, 150K, 200K a year with a few bonuses.
Yeah. He ran quick on the roads in their shoes. I believe he wore actual Kiprun's on the road, so.
Fair. Fair enough. Anyway, Gressier, Kjeldtjer, Big G, second, Almgren, third. Great 10,000 meter final. It really was. And yeah, a couple of DNFs in there as well. I during the race as well, I was looking at that Kip Kuri and I was like, you know, the guy who won the NCAA has a great kick on him, good clothes. I was like, he could be a threat. And yeah, he wound up fourth and managed to beat Nico.
Do you know what I thought during this race? I thought how frustrating it is, again, about the standards and then we've got no Brits in there. Because I just see a race that slow and yeah, the heat's a factor. But it becomes a bit of a leveler when if one of the guys just had a championship experience where actually they just didn't get dropped until really late in the race, it could just be so like defining for their career to be in that environment. Whereas when you see him go like last year, like you say, mate, and it's just way off it and they just drop straight away, that's pointless. But the race like how it was today, you're like, a load of guys could have just been in that.
Look, get everyone in there.
Like Efren Gidey's in there. 19th place, 29th.
That's what the sport's about. This is such a
guys,
good...
but he's had a fantastic experience. Do you know what I mean? And you've got to think he is in line with
it is such a good advert for the sport. It's what the sport's about. You know, it's about these upsets. It's about people breaking through. And you know, now you look at Gracia, what's he going to do for the rest of his career? Talking of that, the women's marathon, which I don't know if anyone watched that live. I'll be very impressed. I didn't. Had to get up early for the Copenhagen half. However, Julia Patinane, this lady obviously representing Uruguay, used to live in the UK. I wasn't that familiar with the name at all. Cambridge and Coleridge, ex-member of Cambridge and Coleridge, apparently obviously living out in America.
GB Vest as well, I think.
GB Vest.
Yeah.
And she gets third. 2:27 was her marathon PB going into this race. And obviously she ran 2:27 again on race day, but she'd only run 2:27, hadn't even broken 70 minutes for a half marathon. If she was British, not taken. She's nowhere near the team. She was a 100. And this is why British Athletics, they won't be listening. If they were, this is why you take people on the ranking points. Mm. You know, she was the last person in on the rankings. And that's in the marathon. That is 100. She was 100 going in and she comes away 2:27. Obviously, she must be amazing in the heat. Gets it right in the heat. I mean, there were people blowing up all over the place in that women's marathon. Yeah. It was a great race up front.
It's a leveler. That is the thing. The championships are always a leveler. And yeah, you bang on, mate. It shows you
what can be done, like especially in an endurance race. I mean, the 10K is a lot different to the marathon. But in the marathon, when people are dying and you're just, you've got momentum and you're just, you know, catching people.
She couldn't believe it.
She couldn't believe it.
Over the line, checking where she's come, and yeah, amazing scenes.
Unbelievable. It is absolutely unbelievable. And that is a huge story. And you know, obviously she's doing great things. She's training hard, but it just shows you with the marathon again, you can. If you can get it right, I mean, we saw with Emil last year, you know, running fourth on what was supposedly a hilly course, what was very hot conditioned as well, still ran very fast, you know, in relative terms to his lifetime best. And if you can get it right and you can run close to your best.
Hey, not long till Emil kicks off, mate.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, quick one in. So, I mean, off of that, I'm like inspired. I'm like, Jesus, Emil could get the job done and go win. I mean, I've heard some things that he was doing in training. It's staggering.
Forward to that one for sure. Might have to stay up for that. You know?
You stay up for it, mate. You stay up.
I don't think I've got it in the locker, to be honest.
I wish I could stay up for it. I'm flying out to Tokyo tomorrow, so... I won't stay up for it. I've got a very early start anyway, so I reckon I'll be one of the first people to watch it who didn't watch it live. So so some incredible stories coming out today. I mean, it was the day of the underdog, really. It was the day of the underdog. Mate, should we move over to
go from the underdog to the big dog and chat about Jakob?
A few Goliaths falling.
Before we do chat about those 1500 heats, and we keep having to say this, can we sort these fucking kits out?
Crap, isn't it?
It is impossible. We got GB guys running around in an Ole Miss kit.
Ole Miss kit?
It's just...
Mate, the actual vest looks like a training top.
It's just a white Nike vest.
Mate, I've heard apparently you only wear the blue one for a final. So apparently it's, unless you're wearing that like all-in-one thing, but for the vest-wise, it's white in the heat and then it's blue in the final. Apparently,
I don't mind that if everyone's ending the same, but then when people are wearing speed suits, the US kit looks more like a GB kit than the GB kit.
The amount of times I've seen a US runner be like, who's that then?
Yeah,
genuinely. Yeah, kits are poor. Do you know what else is interesting? You watch these 1500s and you're like, I swear now more than ever, and we all, I think we repeat this as well. How many fools are there? It was the same last year at the Olympics, the same at the World Championship before. Can people just not race? Are they just like have forgotten the ability to run in a pack? I swear to God, people are too used to running behind a bike. People are too used to training on their own. No one trains in packs anymore. Like, it's crazy. They can't, every single, almost every, I reckon we had, what did we watch? 6 1500s today? I reckon at least half of those there was a faller. I'm pretty sure. You know, it was like women's semi-final, another faller, as well as loads in their heat and people just flying everywhere. Ends, obviously, Coach goes down, which is a real shame because he should have been reinstated, I think. That was tough that he wasn't reinstated, but that's a huge name out of the men's 1500. And yeah, then on that note, and I think all these pace races, they don't learn to run in packs. You know, they're so anxious. You can tell people are so anxious. Let's start with the men's 15, mate, and then we'll get to the women's and talk about the final. And you know, we know who's going to win that one. But I thought at 9 o'clock in the morning, it was a classic case of there are a lot of boys who looked sluggish out there.
Yeah, I was pleased to see Kerr looking looking calm as ever, and just quite happy to run around, stay out of trouble, and get the job done. Him and Wyman looked good. And I think Wyman needed to go out and do what he did and have a strong showing in the heat, just because he's not been running that well. Whereas for someone like Kerr, it really doesn't matter, and he was happy to just run out there. But I think actually, I know it's a heat, but I think the win for Wyman will actually do him a lot of good going into the next round.
Yeah, I think that's the confidence he needed. It was quite a commanding win as well. You know, he didn't intend to win, find himself, and he just looked really good. And I have a feeling the final will be similar, in a sense of, obviously you haven't got Habs is out, Jakob's out. You haven't really got any natural front runners who are just going to go and push this thing on. Yes, you've got guys who might like a fast-ish first lap, yeah, but it would definitely slow.
Kerr's probably one of the ones that you're like, he's striking from far out.
I think Kerr's got a bit of a headache when you look at this final now. Yeah. I think he has got a headache. You know, I think he's got a great kick, but he does need the race to be moving. And it's going to be very similar to, you know, you look at the 10K today, there's 8, 9, 10 guys going for gold, and the positioning in the 1500. Oh my God.
It will depend as well, because we'll lose some of them. We'll lose some other big names in the semi, and then maybe it becomes easier for Kerr in terms of where he takes it, you know.
But I can't see anyone taking this race up. You know, even if they take it up, they take it up. It seems like they just settle at that 58-59, and then even that second lap just being a little bit slower. And when you do that, when you're a 158-159, the best you're going to get out of that race is maybe a 334 for these guys. So you're looking at, I think it'll be another sort of 335. I think it'll be a 334, 335 race in the final, which in this day and age is actually quite tactical. That's quite slow. And they're going to hammer it home. And so when you talk about Whiteman, I just think Whiteman and Kerr are just very, very good at positioning. You know, Whiteman's done so many races and he's learned from those races. I mean, they've both won a world title anyway, but they get themselves out of trouble. They put themselves in the right positions at the right time. When they're fit and when they're on it, they can execute that. And, you know, whereas I look at a lot of the others and they do leave themselves vulnerable. They get themselves in bad positions. You know, people like Strand. I mean, Nilsson wasn't that impressed with him today. You know, the two Kenyans, the two Chariots, Reynolds and Timothy, they get themselves in some horrible positions out there. And, you know, and Gourley is great. I don't think he's going to quite have it. And then you've got, you know, a few others as well. But for me, because looking good, I think he'll...
Yeah, he did look good.
I think Hocker will be the man to beat.
Yeah, it's Hocker and Kerr, isn't it? I think, but like you say...
He's discarding Lauros.
Yeah, no way. No way. Well, he's not a world champ.
Lauros has looked very, very good. I just think...
Too good. Too good, too early. He looked good too
easy. I don't
know
why. I think it is a skill to win these races, and it's just crazy the fact he's still only 20. And his time is definitely coming, but I just think the fact Hocker's won it before, I think the fact Kerr's won it before, they can deal with the emotions, they can deal with that. You know, do you remember Jakob even saying like how nervous everyone was before the Olympic final? And was it in 2021 when he won the Olympic final? I think it was then when he said this comment. It's like after that race, you know, he was like, you know, everyone was so hyped up, everyone was running well, everyone's super excited, and then got to the final and actually everyone stood on the start line. He could tell everyone was really, really nervous. Mm-hmm. And I think you see it as well. The hundreds always fascinate me when they run really fast in the semis and they're super relaxed. And it's like, if they did that in the final, they'd go and win. Yeah. But then in the final, there's just that extra level of tension. Obviously you're up against, you know, there's no longer one or two guys you can just move around easily.
As well, before those 100 finals, that cannot help anyone.
Yeah.
Like, it cannot help.
I wonder how different the result would be if they just wheeled them out and just said, right, on your marks, get set, go. Like, and there was no introductions or anything.
I think that was where you obviously talk about Jakob, talk about people being nervous in Tokyo. I think it went the other way a bit for people in Tokyo. They're like, you just stood in this stadium. It's the Olympic
Some people,
final,
yeah, yeah.
And you're just stood there with your own thoughts about this Olympic final versus actually being distracted by the fact that it's the Olympic final and everyone's going crazy. So,
and I think, you know, someone like Lauros is going into this now and he's going, I've got the gold. If I can, he'll be telling himself, if I execute this race right, I'll win. I'll get the gold. And I think that's a very different mindset. And until you've proven you can handle that mindset, for me, you're always going to be the underdog.
I don't think he believes that. I don't think anyone believes they can beat Kerr and Hocker. Mate, to be honest. I think they're too good.
Mate, I think...
The two of them are too good.
No, they definitely do think that. I think Lauros is definitely one of those. And Whiteman could be a threat. Unfortunately, Giles went out, but some huge names. Yeah, Habs, Fanel Coach, Ingebrigtsen. We haven't even talked about Ingebrigtsen. I mean, for me,
Germer out as well.
That Asai went out. He ran a great 1500 in Diamond League not long ago. Yeah. But let's talk about Jakobsen. I mean, worrying. I thought he wasn't going to be at it just because, you know, one, you do need races. But then two, whenever you have an Achilles, I mean, Achilles is bad. He wouldn't have been able to do this. You know, this is a guy who's not speed orientated anyway. He wouldn't have been able to do the speed work. He wouldn't have been able to do the specific sessions to get him really ready to rip for that 1500. And
he'd probably be more prepped for a quick race. That's the thing. Without having to...
What was really he doing? Change. His tactics were just like...
I know. I'm like, you can't be jogging off.
Do you know what he's lost as well? He's lost that aura. He don't have that anymore. When he's, you know, a couple of years ago...
He's just been busy buying Pokemon cards. Everyone's like, oh, he's just not even here for the race.
I do think that sometimes, like, people do hate a little bit on Josh Kerr's YouTube and stuff, but Jakob has, like, shown a different light to him. And I almost feel like because of that, it's very cool that we've got to know Jakob in that way and like who he is as a person. But at the same time, he has lost that.
He did post saying it was literally like more than one reason to come to Tokyo. And he was like him buying Pokemon cards. I get it. The Jakob of old was so locked in that...
Well, he'd walk into a room and everyone would be like,
yeah.
Oh God, it's Jakob.
He only thinks about running. Like, he's just...
You've got to play up on that. And I think this is a little...
It's okay to have those things. But yeah, like, I think you're right, mate. Like, I think to...
Like yeah. Danny Mackey did a great interview with, I think it was AW. And, you know, he was saying there is two sides to Kerr. We only see the Kerr who is, you know, the ruthless Kerr who, you know, takes no shit, loves to sort of trash talk a little bit, loves to hate on his opponents
a little
bit.
I do think it is clear that Kerr is like...
Kerr plays up on that.
For sure. Yeah.
Kerr plays up on that. And
it's brilliant. It's good.
But I think he has to, because if you let your guard down in front of your opponents...
The problem with running in general is that they're all too pally-pally, I think, half the time. Like, and then it doesn't give them the edge. Whereas if you look at some of the greats, like...
But, yeah, we might be reading into this whole situation and going down an absolute rabbit hole here, because he has been injured and he hasn't been able to get the work done. And I think, you know, he was even speaking about he spent a lot more time on the elliptical recently, and I can imagine what's going on. You know, he's getting one session done and he's having to muck about and cycle and aqua jog and elliptical for a couple of days, get another session done. It's probably been far from ideal. But even the fact, you know, I think you go back and, you know, someone like Haile Gebrselassie, when he was injured going into a majors and Olympics and stuff like that, he would keep it top secret. He would never want the Kenyans finding out. You know, there was a point where he didn't even warm up around the track because he didn't want to see them. He didn't want them to see he was limping. Mm. You know, he just hid in the treatment tent, and then rolls out onto the track and goes and wins Sydney. It's like, you know, there were so many times where, you know, athletes would be hiding injuries and. You know, obviously in this day and age, storytelling is a huge part of athletics, and we love it, and we love seeing that light to him. But I wonder, especially like when you toe the line and you get pumped like that and you're way off it, now going into the 5K, you'd be a fool to count him out and not respect him.
You would, because there's the other element that if this is all a big ruse and Jakob just needed a
wake up call,
37 rep to get him cooking for the
But he talks about he's more ready for the 5K and stuff like that. And I'm like, the 5K might not be quick.
He looked a bit like his physique. He didn't look as powerful to you.
Well, he just looked flat. He looked flat. And I think the problem is he just hasn't been able to hit the workouts and do all the work that makes him explosive. He did look flat. Definitely that last, you know, the last 100 there just had nothing. You know, he talks about being a bit more ready for the 5K. The heat's going to be a tough job for him. Who's making that heat quick enough? And then, you know, if you're coming down for a close in that heat, like these boys can close now. Yeah. You know, you're going to be up against, literally, he's going to be up against Hocker, Laros. Like, there's loads of guys. And then you've got Almgren, you've got Nikia, you've got all those guys who are either stepping down from the 10 or stepping up from the 15. And we know they can close.
Hey, at least he's going to be rested for once.
Yeah, he's going to be. Yeah, he'll probably watch that 15 final and that will really rile him up and he'll be ready
That's
to go.
I want to see shots of Jakob in the stadium watching.
But yeah, I was stunned. I thought he would have enough to be in the final. Didn't think he'd feature, you know,
well, at least
he'd
get the
medal
semi.
In the final, but I thought he'd have enough.
No, I didn't think we thought he'd be at his best, but I did not see him.
He said some cryptic things. You know, he was saying about he hasn't got what do you say in his interview? Like, hasn't had the right team. Hasn't had the right team for a while. And I was like, see, that's, I thought that team was like handpicked, and he wanted just his brothers to be sort of, you know, coaching him, and he wanted to take a lot more ownership as a program and stuff like that. So I don't know. He's obviously having a tough period, and I'm sure he will be back. But I wonder if now it's Europeans next year, and if you're Jakob, surely you look at Gressier winning the 10,000 and you go, that's mine. Like, I don't think Gressier has ever beat Jakob in his life. Like, Jakob will look at that 10K and be like, Almgren bronze, Gressier gold, and obviously you got Kjeldtjer in there. And that's the next time the World Championships and the Olympics roll around, surely he's going to be 10. all over that 5 and 10. Mm. Surely. I mean, a 1500 is...
I just think it's a pride thing, though. I think he...
He'll keep coming back.
Yeah, I think he knows that...
He ain't going to... Unless he starts running the 1500 world record, I think he actually does need to move on from that event if he wants to win these legendary doubles and get these major medals. Because, but also the 1500 is, that's what makes him so good over the 5000, and the fact that he's probably in his worst 1500 shape ever means he will struggle over the 5000. That's my Jakob takes. Anyone else that we like the look of in a 1500, bud? I think all the big names are there. Ethan Strand looked sluggish. But again, I think 9 o'clock in the morning is tough for a lot of
What I'd say about Strand, right, is Strand positioned himself terribly, looked sluggish, but still got it done quite comfortably. So this is the sort of guy, and I think we've said this leading up, that they're the dangerous ones when it comes to the scrappy race in the final, because you just don't know. There's just a complete unknown quantity. Who knows what they can do. And he's not going to be hitting the front and paying really close attention and trying to win the thing. And actually, sometimes they're the ones that come through and spoil the party, you know.
Well, yeah, we saw that happen to Kerr, didn't we? I think it's, you know, I think Kerr, Whiteman, Gawley, all of those guys, you know, did say they took that 9 a.m. heat very seriously. Kerr's out there saying he's the most prepared than anyone for that 9 a.m. heat. Let alone the final, he's been preparing for that 9 a.m. heat. And I think, because Kerr knows that if you are a little bit sluggish, one, it doesn't do great things for your confidence at a time where you need to be extremely high on confidence in the championship. Yeah. You don't want to show any signs of weakness. And then, you know, secondly, it is just bloody hard and you don't want to risk it, especially the fact there's no fastest losers anymore. Yeah. You know, you don't want to get outkicked. You don't want to find yourself in a bad position. And there's just so many men who are so close in ability that you do run that risk if you're not on it. But they'll enjoy the fact that obviously tomorrow they have that semi-final in the evening. And so they'll enjoy that.
Yeah, that's pretty much those 15s. I think for me still, though, yeah, Kerr and Hocker, they've gone into this as the favourites and they look the best as well.
Agree with that one. We'll see what the semis bring. Women's 15, semis, final coming up.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't obviously spoken about the heats and post-semis. No British women through to the final. Unfortunately, obviously, Revey did well to get through to the semi. And yeah, a shame to see the other ladies go out in the heat. But it's tough out there, isn't it? And I think the only one we thought that really's got like a good chance was Muir. And she just faded in her heat. And watching her kind of interview afterwards, she kind of said... She didn't feel quite right on the day. She'd been running well, and it just wasn't her day, really. And I think, yeah, I don't know. I expected Muir to probably make the final, but I didn't expect her to feature if she did.
It's a shame. It's a shame we haven't got anyone in the final, and it was a shame she didn't make it out of the semis.
Yeah, Revey.
Well, Revey, sorry, and Muir. And obviously Wallace. I thought we were just talking about Muir. Sorry, mate. I just quickly was just looking at their splits. We're talking about Muir right now, aren't we?
Yeah, no, I was saying, obviously, Muir not even into the semis. So I was going back to the heats, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah, I think that will be... I mean, it's just not much to say, is it, really? She just didn't have the legs on the day. Again, just looked a bit flat. Put herself in all the right positions on the shoulder of Kipyegon at the bell. And you're just like, well, she's... of course going to come top six here. Mm. Like, there's got to be a disaster if she gets out, you know, outkicked down to 7th, 8th. And she did. And it was like, what? Strange. So I think, you know, she did get herself back into good shape. You know, I think when you look at the British Championships and you look at our 15 girls, you know, a year, like, you know, the fact of the matter is that no matter how slow that race was, no matter how tactical that race is at the British Champs, you know, they got beat by Sarah Calvert, who is going to be she's going to be an incredible athlete. Right now, this year, she wasn't good enough to even qualify for the World Championships, and they got put away by someone who couldn't make it to the World Championships. And that's a worry when you get to the World Championships and you're up against women who are the same level as you, if not better, and you're up against, you know, 12 in a race, and there's 48 of you there who are exceptionally good.
Well, that's it. And if you look at the final for the women's 1500, Tara Healey is your last qualifier.
Last qualifier, yeah. And how good she's been in the Diamond League circuit.
That shows you the level. And obviously it's a semi-final, right? I'm not saying she's the worst person in that race, but that shows you the level.
Lyndon Hall's been like off the front of these Diamond Leagues, and she's been doing great things in Diamond Leagues, finishing in top sort of 3, 4, 5 spots all the time. And she, you know, she's not even in this final. She got knocked out. She was, what, 7th there. So, yeah. And you just look at that heat. Like, by the way, the Kenyans for me are looking, Jess Hull and Nikki Hiltz have got to go some in order to upset these Kenyans, because they are looking good. Dorcas Iwoi. Yeah, Dorcas Iwoi, who was in Kipyegon's heat, right behind her. So she trains with the Puma group. I was watching this race with Paddy Dever and Jack Rowe and Fiona O'Keefe and a few of those Puma athletes. They all went to, most of them were in Copenhagen, and yeah, they were saying, you know, Alistair Craig is coaching her, and she's part of the team, and yeah, she's a super talent. She was at like a local, not a famous university by any means, in North Carolina, and I think Alistair Craig just saw her running one day and was like, yeah, I'm gonna, yeah, sign this girl up. This girl, yeah, needs to be signed up. I think he might have said Campbell. She used to run for Campbell Uni or something, but wasn't taking things too seriously or even training that hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just checking if Campbell University is actually in North Carolina. Yeah, I think it was Campbell University she used to run at. So, and she looked very good, and that's someone who we haven't seen much of at all, really. She was right behind Kipyegon, obviously Hailu in there as well, Sinclair. And that was messy. Falls all over the place and in that one. But yeah, women's 1500 final, there's no Brits, which is a real shame. And I think it might be a Kenyan sweep, or has a potential to be a Kenyan sweep, the way they all looked in their semis.
Yeah, it sure does. And I think one thing we're in no doubt of is that Kipyegon victory. And she just shows again and again why she's the best in the world and the greatest of all time, because she just makes it look so easy.
Yeah, I think looking at her, I think this definitely will be her last year on the over the 1500 and stuff. I think she's tempted for a new challenge. And I think she just
almost needs to move on if she's going to get the best ever out of herself over the longer distances.
Over the longer distances, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not because she can't, like, she could keep just winning the 15 for as long as she liked, I think. But if she wants to get some of her prime years over a 5 and 10 or over a 10 and marathon, then yeah, she needs to go now.
Yeah, I think it's less about ability but more mentality. And I think Kipyegon is someone who will want to be challenged, and I think that breaking the sub 4 minute mile might have excited her once, but I think now she's done it and was so far off it, she's attempted it and she was so far off it, I think that won't get her out of bed in the morning, because I don't think she really believes she can go around sub 4. And you know, she's broken the world record, she's arguably put it at a distance for a lot of women for a long time, and you know, I just think she's won everything there is to win, and now she's going to need something else to really motivate herself and work towards. And you know, we know Patrick Sang loves converting people into marathon runners.
Yeah, I mean, training wise it's not even going to be a crazy difference for her in terms of
smoothish transition. So yeah. So that was the women's 1500. Their final is what, 16th of September. So Tuesday night, women's 1500 final. So we enjoy that. And obviously the men's semis are tomorrow evening. And then their final is going to be 17th of September, Wednesday. I should be in the stadium, so I am buzzing for that. Unfortunately, I will miss a lot of the action tomorrow. I have to watch it on catch up. I'll miss it live. But yeah, so I guess they were the big storylines. I mean, I think it's been a fantastic champ so far. The conditions have been brutal, and you know, both 10Ks. In fact, we haven't even discussed the women's 10K. I mean, Bataclesi to put away Segai and then get it. She's amazing. She's amazing. And actually, I thought she ran Chebet really close. And again, I'm looking. Chebet is a freak. Chebet is generational superstar, and Bataclesi is like running her to the line. And the women's 10K really wasn't even like, it was slow early, but to run sort of 30-38, you know, Bataclesi's hit a national record there. That's in those conditions, it's pretty good going.
It is, mate, and it adds to Bataclety consistently being up there with the best in the world, and she's still young. I think that's the thing with Bataclety. She's 25 years of age, and if she keeps going, she's going to become a world dominator, because you just keep picking up medal, silver last year, silver this year.
They both are. This could be a great duel. I mean, Chevet's 25 as well. It could be an insane duel with both those women over the next few years. But Bataclety would have got a lot of confidence from now. I don't think she gets near Chevet at the moment over a faster race. Obviously, Chevet's, when she's attacking world records, she's untouchable. However,
but again, it's an example of why it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. She seems to have a very, very good close, Bataclety. I think a little bit more belief and just sort of getting onto the shoulder of Chevet at some point in that race and really challenging, instead of just sort of, she'd never settled, but you know, I think she would have been focused on securing a medal and then just trying to level up the color. And, you know, I wonder whether, you know, going into the five, she'll pay a little bit closer attention and challenge at some point and maybe just make a bold move and see what happens. See how these, because you never know, these athletes can crumble. You know, you come up onto an athlete's shoulder and you challenge them and you ask the question. Sometimes they can fold and they can tie up and they can't quite respond like they can when they're out front. So, but it was, yes, we're certainly going to see some good duels between those two if they stay healthy.
Yeah, for sure, mate. And obviously, like a decent run from the Brits as well. Obviously good having Megan Keith and Callie in there. Picking up some great experience, obviously, for Megan Keith and obviously much better than the experience she had last year. And then obviously for Callie, getting to race some high quality, world-class track athletes as well ahead of her marathon too.
Yeah, I think both those can be really happy with their runs. And Megan Keith, just like you said, to bounce back off of last year and everything that happened at the Olympics and sort of recovered, got head down again, got herself in great shape over the 1500, over the 5K, you know, PBing. And yeah, I think she'll be really happy that 10th in the world. And you look as well, I mean, Japanese lady was class, Hiranaka. So, but you look and if you're Keith, you're like, Europeans next year, you know, can I, depending on what Bataclety does, you know, she might play around with things. But even the Commonwealth Games for Keith and Thackeray and people like that. It's going to be huge for Keith next year, actually, the Commonwealth Games, right, being Scottish. So probably the last Commonwealth Games ever as well. So, but yeah, and not, just more championship experience for them in those tens. And I think it takes two or three. You've got to be in those races. You know, you're not going to win your first global 10,000 meters. Like, it just doesn't, you know, look at Gressier, prime example. Look at Farah. You know, you've got to be in Fisher. You know, how many was he in before he sort of, he was in them in 2019?
She's already. Yeah.
You need to get in three or four before you can really start to understand, okay, this is how I need to prepare. This is how the race is going to go. This is how I need to close, everything like that.
Yeah. 100%. Well, look, mate, yeah, like I think you're about to say before we go into that 10K, it's been a great champs already, even like though it's been a few days and loads more to come. It's weird. I always feel like the men's 100 comes so early and it feels like we then must be at the end. It's just the beginning. Loads more to come. Emil's going off in over just over an hour from when we're recording now.
What? Is he?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's 11:30.
Shit. Well, maybe I will stay up for that. That's not bad at all. Wow.
You got to remember it's a marathon, mate.
Yeah, 1:30.
That's what grates me the most. I hate if I'm not going to finish it.
Yeah. And I hate, like, maybe it was when it was the Tokyo Olympics, like, maybe it was a similar scenario, but you know when you're, like, dozing off and you don't watch it properly, you don't enjoy it properly because you're just so tired.
Yeah. Mate, I miss the days when we were both doing fuck all and then we could just stay up for champs and change our time.
Yeah, literally. I had nothing on the next day. World. So I would, wait, we used to lock into Tokyo time zone. We'd be like, we'll just do the, I remember the Olympics.
I'm in Rio 2016. That. I literally did. I fully just changed my clocks.
But yeah, that was it. That was it. They were behind or whatever. Yeah, we were just in that time zone, living life, mate, nocturnal. But anyways, yeah, so that's a quick recap. I mean, obviously, I will mention it. I was at Copenhagen today. Some fantastic runs, by the way, out there from Brits. And not just, you know, Devaram World, 60:17. He's just off his, you know, Paddy's just off his best again. And he wanted quicker. I think he was hoping for, you know, definitely 59. So they went out so hard. You know, Paddy and Rose first 2K was like 5:30. They set off at 2:45, 2:46. It was aggressive. But they held it together well. And I think, you know, both of them were isolated late on in that race. Roe was pacing for a large part and then still hung on for a big PB, 60 minutes, 53. Big step up for him. He's looking good. Still a long way out from Valencia. And he's going to Font and everything like that. So in the next few weeks. And Paddy's obviously doing New York. those boys in shape. But there were a lot of Brits who ran 63 minutes as well. Max Malavi, Andy Five. Top of my head, there was a few more as well. Lewis Hannigan from memory. So yeah, that's a lot of Brits in that 63 range, which is pretty impressive for the half marathon in what was very, very wet conditions.
Is it like it is over here?
Yeah, it was bad. Yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah, it was a real shame. It was just like, there was a downpour right before the race started. Didn't stop raining. And then it started to about 5, 6K into the half. It hammered down for about 10K. Yeah. And then the last 5K, it wasn't really raining that much. At that sort of crucial point where you just want to settle and get into a rhythm, it was hammering down. I mean, the race up in the front was awesome. You know, Nicholas Camelli, who was due to do the Worlds and then swapped out for Crop. He was used to run the 5,000. You know, he's 12:46 runner, pace tipped guy to the world record. He won and he fell over one. He fell over bad and then slipped like horrendously on multiple occasions after that as well. So I didn't want to say anything on comms, but his Adidas shoes, zero grip.
I was
going to
say he's going to look
zero grip, mate. The guy was having, mate, he was Bambi on ice. Yeah, he's honestly, I thought.
Puma grip's the one.
It does make me wonder. I reckon, here we go, shoe brands are going to have, it's simple. They are going to have your dry shoe and your wet shoe. I can see it now. Because they're like, that's just another way to sell more shoes. You just go, okay, yeah, this shoe, oh, that's made for the hot summers and the grips, you know, dry weather, and then they're going to have their wet weather grip. And it's going to be
They already do that.
They have that in daily trainers, but not in racing flats. They don't have it in racing flats. The grip is bad on racing flats.
Unless, apart from Puma, that's what I mean. Puma, the only ones, they are a really good grip.
Yeah, so I can...
Just grass reps, Pumas.
Then,
yeah, wet grass. The ones that are like, they do like the carbon ones that are not like, they don't have the two soles. They do like
the boys, to be fair, the Puma boys, they were in their fast hours. They're unreal.
But the ones they have, I think it's the Deviate Nitro Elites. That's a good grip.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just some of the turns, like Camelli was having real problems on a lot of the turns. Mm. You know, and I just think, yeah, you want, in the conditions like that, you want to make sure that you've got some good grip on the bottom of your shoe. Especially the speed these guys are moving at. Yeah, in the women's race, that was a bit of a massacre. Bar the winners held on for, you know, sort of 64 high, but there are a lot of women who went out like low 15 minutes and struggled home in 67, 68. Yeah. It's a bit of a massacre. Yeah, great event and a great weekend for me. So, yeah, looking forward to getting out to Tokyo now and getting in that stadium because it looks pretty mega.
Yeah.
So we'll be back with another episode Tuesday. Tuesday, then hopefully we can just hit the daily episodes from sort of there on out, really.
Yeah.
Because there should be...
Between
me trying some sushi, yeah, I'll let you know my thoughts. I don't know if... Yeah, sushi's never appealed to me.
You ain't got it in you, have you?
It's never appealed to me before. Give me sausage and mash any day. But yeah, women's steeple heats tomorrow, so we'll look forward to that. Obviously, men's marathon and then men's 15 semis and men's steeple final. Which again, talk about fools. There are more fools. There's so much drama. We didn't actually review the men's steeple, but we'll definitely review the final because there's no Brits in it. So we'll talk about the final when it gets to it.
Yeah. Right. Thanks for listening, guys. Again, apologies, this one's late, but we'll be back all week bringing you up to date action. Hope you're enjoying the champs. We certainly are. Catch you very soon.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.